Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Okay, let's unpack this. So today, we're diving into Mark Spitz. And his career is, well, it's kind of a fascinating cultural paradox, isn't it?
It really is. You look at what he produced and, wow, here's someone who was totally comfortable, totally authoritative at like the absolute peak of mainstream rock writing.
Right, the big leagues.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But then also at the same time, deep in the, you know, the gritty, low-budget world of New York's underground theater.
It's an incredible ability, bridging those worlds. We're talking about an American writer born in Far Rockaway, Queens.
Right. Bennington College guy.
Yeah. And he was a senior music journalist, but also this acclaimed playwright. It's wild. He could get deep access to Mick Jagger.
Uh-huh. The big biography.
And then, like, the next week, he's premiering some raw, punk-inspired play down on the Lower East Side.
It's quite the combination.
And yeah, just for clarity, a quick point for anyone maybe Googling right now. This is M-A-R-C Spitz.
The writer, the playwright.
Not Mark Spitz, the swimmer. Legendary, but different guy entirely. Totally different guy. Our Mark Spitz, he really dedicated his life to documenting rock and roll popular culture.
And specifically, kind of where that culture smashed into New York City.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And I think that's the central theme for this deep dive, that versatility you mentioned.
Yeah, he had this really rare skill. Treating, you know, the fleeting stuff, the subcultures, and then the super famous people. Treating it all with the same kind of critical seriousness.
Mm-hmm. He could capture the feel, the ethos of these really niche scenes.
But he was still a regular influential voice in, you know, Vanity Fair or Spin.
Yeah.
High profile media.
Okay, so let's start where most people probably knew him first. Section one, the big time rock journalist, the biographer.
Yeah, this is where he really built his rep, his main platform. Huge. Senior writer at Spin. I mean, that's pretty central to music journalism, especially then.
Absolutely. But his writing, it went way beyond just Spin, didn't it? His reach was pretty massive.
Oh, totally. If you look at where his byline popped up, it's like a masterclass in critical access. He was a contributing music writer for Vanity Fair.
Which says a lot, right? Handling those glossy, in-depth features on huge stars.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But he also wrote for the New York Times, Maxim, publications like Harp and Blender. Even the New York Post.
So he could really shift gears. Highbrow critique one minute, accessible pop coverage the next.
Exactly. He moved between them pretty seamlessly.
And that platform, that credibility, it obviously let him tackle some major book projects, some really comprehensive rock biographies.
Yeah, these weren't just like quick cash-ins. These were serious works that kind of defined these huge figures for a generation. Mm-hmm. They really became standard reading for fans.
Can you give us the main ones?
Sure. Well, there's Bowie,
mm-hmm.
a biography.
Mm-hmm.
And Jagger, rebel, rock star, rambler, rogue. Just those two alone really cemented his reputation, you know? Capturing the scale, the mythology of music's giants.
The heavy hitters.
For sure. But he didn't just stick with the classic rock icons. He was also really important in documenting, like, newer punk history. He wrote Nobody Likes You, Inside the Turbulent Life, Times, and Music of Green Day.
Ah, interesting. And I remember he also did that L.A. punk book, right? Co-author.
Yeah, that's crucial. We got the Neutron Bomb, the untold story of L.A. punk. He wrote that with Brendan Mullen.
And that shows his dedication, doesn't it? Capturing the authentic, kind of gritty origins of a scene, not just the stadium tours and platinum records.
Absolutely. It shows he cared about the roots as much as the results.
So what really speaks to the authority of these biographies? How were they received?
Well, the global impact is pretty telling. These books, they weren't just big in the U.S. They were seen as definitive international.
Right, well.
Yeah, translated and published in French, Danish, German, Dutch. He was genuinely shaping how rock history was understood, you know, worldwide.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me, though, this shift. How does this same guy, this rigorous journalist with top-level access, the one trusted to write the definitive story on Jagger,
right?
How does he then spend his evenings becoming this, like, essential player in a super niche, tiny downtown New York theater scene? Doesn't that, I don't know, risk making him seem like he's just dabbling, like a dilettante?
That's the tension, isn't it? That's the core of his whole legacy, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we should dive into now. Section 2, Mark Spitz, the downtown playwright.
Okay. So where did this start?
It really came out of the Ludlow Street scene. This was starting around 1998, and it centered on this venue called Totokan Nada.
Totokan Nada. Okay, for listeners who maybe aren't familiar with that whole New York scene back then, what does downtown theater actually mean here? What's the vibe?
That's really crucial context. We're talking Lower East Side, late 90s, early 2000s. It was the absolute epicenter of raw, low-budget, often pretty experimental theater.
Okay.
It was completely disconnected from, you know, the polish of Broadway or even established off-Broadway houses.
Right. No big budgets, no velvet seats.
None of that.
Yeah.
The work was often loud, visceral. It spoke directly to the counterculture of that moment. It was kind of like punk rock, but, you know, adapted for the stage.
Ah, okay. That helps connect the dots. So the aesthetic actually lines up with the music he was covering.
Absolutely. It feels like a direct theatrical extension of the stuff he was writing about in Spin or Neutron Bomb.
Makes sense.
And the play titles themselves, they totally reflect that raw, rock and roll infused satire. Things like Retail Sluts, The Rise and Fall of the Farewell Drugs.
Wow, okay.
The Hobo Got Too High, I Want to Be Adored.
Uh-huh.
And then the perfect mashup of his worlds. The name of this play is Talking Heads.
Ha! I love that. He just couldn't stop mixing his passions.
Yeah.
But was this just him, like, having fun, or did this theater work actually get taken seriously? Did it get critical recognition?
Oh, it absolutely did. He wasn't just dabbling. His play, Shyness is Nice, in particular, got some real critical acclaim.
How so?
Well, it was actually selected and anthologized as one of NY Theater's best plays of 2001.
Okay, that's significant, especially for work coming out of such a small, you know, underground kind of venue.
Exactly. It's serious validation.
Yeah.
And it shows the power of his writing, regardless of the medium. It's enduring life.
How do you mean?
Well, the opening monologue from Shyness is Nice.
Mm.
Years later, it was included in this applause anthology called One-on-One, Best Men's Monologues of the 21st Century. That came out in October 2008.
No kidding. So the guy writing about Mick Jagger also pens a monologue considered definitive for contemporary American actors.
That specific piece of recognition, it bridges his two careers beautifully, I think.
Yeah.
It confirms that whether he was tackling Bowie's life story or writing a monologue for some tiny downtown stage, his critical eye, his ability to capture a specific voice for a specific time that was constant and impactful.
Which leads us perfectly into, I guess, section 3, defining counterculture and legacy. Because beyond the big bios and the gritty plays, Spitz seemed to have this knack for trying to, I don't know, put his finger on cultural movements while they were happening, define them.
Yeah, he wasn't just reporting on stuff. He was actively trying to, like, create a cultural taxonomy, make sense of it all.
How did he do that?
Well, his memoir, Posure,
mm-hmm.
a memoir of downtown New York City in the 90s, that's crucial here.
Okay.
Posure.
That book is basically the self-documentation that connects his journalism right back to the exact scene where his plays were born.
Ah, so it provides the context, the world of retail sluts and all that.
Exactly. He was living the culture that he wrote about and that he put on stage.
But then, okay, then he turns around and writes a book called Tree, The Gentle Revolution in Music, Books, Television, Fashion, and Film.
Right.
That seems like such a huge shift from punk chaos to, like, quiet, earnest, kind of quirky aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
What was he trying to do with that?
I think it really shows his commitment to giving historical weight, critical weight, mm-hmm. to movements that often get overlooked or just dismissed as, you know, fleeting trends.
Yeah.
By writing Twee, he was basically saying, look, this aesthetic, this gentle revolution, it's worth serious critical thought, just as much as stadium rock is.
So it elevated him, maybe, beyond just being a journalist to being more of a public voice on culture?
I think so, yeah. And he clearly had the platform to use that voice. You see him speaking at universities.
Right. Didn't he speak at Columbia?
Yeah,
Columbia University, talking about playwriting. And then DePaul University, talking about journalism. He literally taught both halves of his career.
That's amazing.
And you'd see him pop up as a go-to cultural commentator, right? Like a talking head on MTV, VH1, MSNBC.
Right, the expert voice explaining things.
Totally. He'd really mastered that multi-platform way of doing cultural critique, applying his insights wherever pop culture was being discussed. He also wrote fiction too, right? A couple of novels.
Yeah, that's right. How Soon Is Never and Too Much Too Late.
Mm.
And he popped up in some anthologies too, like The Encyclopedia of X's and Rock and Roll Cage Match. So writing across basically all formats.
He really covered the map.
Okay, so wrapping this up, what does this all mean? Mark Spitz, his career, it's a pretty remarkable trajectory, isn't it?
It really is. You've got this senior music journalist providing the definitive context for these rock legends.
Bowie, Jagger.
Mm-hmm. And then, at the exact same time, he's this recognized playwright shaping an intimate, specific downtown scene.
His legacy seems to be about a writer who just refused to let culture be neatly separated into boxes.
Yeah, he provided context and insight across pretty much every major medium. High culture, low culture, pop culture.
Mm.
He was there.
It's a powerful testament, I think, to the idea that critical rigor matters everywhere. Whether you're covering, you know, the biggest star on the planet or the smallest, grimiest little theater.
Agreed. And we should mention, sadly, that Mark Spitz died in New York City, February 2017. He was only 47.
So young.
Yeah. Our sources confirm his death, but didn't provide any information about the cause.
But his work, it definitely remains, it's like this potent cultural time capsule, isn't it?
Yeah.
Documenting both the huge narratives of rock history and these tiny, intense, maybe easily forgotten corners of the New York art world.
Absolutely. Which I think raises a really interesting question for you, the listener, to think about. Mark Spitz showed us that the same sharp critical intelligence can, and maybe should, be applied everywhere. So think about today. Which cultural chronicler now has the authority, the access, and the inclination to cover, say, Taylor Swift?
The biggest possible star.
Right. And also, in the same year, give serious attention to the smallest, most experimental off-Broadway theater company.
Yeah, who's doing both with the same kind of depth and credibility that Spitz managed.
Exactly. That model of versatile engagement, it feels incredibly rare now. Maybe impossible. And it's definitely worth pondering why that might be.